think it's crazy how we met, in the sense, like, regardless of me being at a convention in Leitrim or whatever, and you being there as well, like, it takes a pandemic for all, like atheist, agnostic, free thinkers to come together and stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
like, were you starting your meeting in Raynham before this happened? Like, were you? Well, did you have the idea set?
Roger and I had discussed it for a long time. I mean, I had. And really, the catalyst for me wanting to do it all where I'm living in London is there was a meeting at the very same time, 11 o'clock on a Saturday morning, which, you know, it's not, sometimes it's probably not a very nice way of putting it, but they were very God-centric. They were, you know, kind of, if somebody new did turn up, they were making it very clear that if they didn't find a God or a higher power, then the chances of them becoming well or getting well or slim. Now, when you put that in the context of where I was living, it's a very secular area. It's not.
Like you said about the food, like, you have choice, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
you should have choice as well for fucking AA. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right, and that. Podcast you did, that last one that you did, I don't know if you've done many in between, the one you did with Joe C was really, I've meant to mention it at meetings. I don't know if you've managed to stitch the two pieces together, but he said some fascinating things there that as recently, to me it's recent, I mean I would have been 8 years of age, but in 1973 or whenever he came along, another, not many meetings, not everyone had big books and things like that. So I'm guessing that us lot in what we're terming ourselves as secular AA, free thinkers, agnostic atheists, I think there was a lot of that naturally anyway, and that what we're doing isn't probably new. What we might be doing is kind of a kickback to the people who, for whatever reason, feel it necessary to go down the very road that Bill W. was warned about by the doctors, you know, keep it to some very basic things. So that's what we're doing, really, is just going back to probably what might have been there more naturally. I don't know. I mean, you read so much. I heard Annie from Ireland talk about what's so difficult now to know what's fake news, what's true and what's factual. I mean, there are certainly, you can read between the lines about a lot of things, and a lot of things make sense. Like what Joe C said, you know, the big book would have taken on more of an emphasis, maybe because Bill W. passed away. And it's the classic, isn't it? You're loved more when you're gone than when you're alive. You know, that's whatever we have, whatever you've left is what is all that we have. And, you know, people who consider the first 164 pages of the big book to be biblical in terms, really needs to go and get a membership card of the library. Yeah,
it's funny because that's why people love John Lennon as well, they say, because he never had a chance to, you know what I mean, go stale. Like, that was it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think it was Joe as well, I heard saying that people that say you have to do it with the 164 pages. But who did it without it? Oh, wait, the founders did it without it. You know what I mean? So it's like, you're on a bit of mountain of knowledge. That chap just fucking, he's one of a kind. He's the best, isn't he?
Yeah. That's it. And the people romanticize.
Okay, that. He's the second best, Brendan. You're the best, right? I hear you.
You know, that's the thing, you know, when people do pass on and that, you know, you're not going to get anything more for them. So whatever they have left behind in writing or in whatever their legacy is, it'll get added to and in one shape or another. I mean, what Bill W. did do was phenomenal, really, you know.
Have you gone to America, in the sense, have you done that, like, Akron trip and all that?
I've never been to Akron or anything like that. Actually, I'll tell you.
Never been to America. I've been in a few states.
The last time I went to New York 3 or 4 years ago, I decided I was going out to Brooklyn to where Bill W. lived in Brooklyn. Okay. And I went to the street, and I sat on the steps, and I had my partner take a photograph of me standing at the door on the steps. And when I came back to the hotel we were staying in, I started looking at the photographs, and I realized I was at the wrong door. It's progress, not perfection.
Nice.
So I thought, well, that's good. I was obviously wasn't meant to say I'm an atheist, but I'm superstitious. I thought I wasn't meant to be at his door. I meant to go back. That'll keep me coming back.
Definitely.
So the next time I go, I'll go back again to Clinton Street. Yeah. But yeah, I fancy doing those things. Yeah, I don't know if you know Miles from Devon.
Yeah, I've only met him recently. He's a nice character. I like him a lot.
Very, very nice man, lovely character, and fascinating that he actually worked at Stepping Stones in up New York State, the house that Bill W. and Lois had some years after he left New York itself.
He was in Canada for ages as well, wasn't he?
I think he's certainly a well-traveled man, Miles. He'd be an interesting character.
Love his voice.
He gets to talk to.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, he
was at last Saturday's, and I heard him at Raynham there one of the days. And just a really nice fella. He's got a great voice as well, man. Jeez, I'd listen to an audio book of that chap. Brendan, no, that's not it. It's good,
yeah,
good,
yeah,
good dude.
That's right, yeah.
Nice, really, yeah. Nice voice.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
You haven't asked me any hard questions. Nothing difficult. You give me a nice, easy ride here. So that's good. I'm glad to see the check arrived.
Exactly. And it's funny that you think the drink might have killed your father rather than all the sex he got.
That's fantastic.
Sorry. I should have said it earlier when you mentioned the 12 folk.
I don't know. Yeah, it seems a lot. It seems, as I said, at the time, it just seemed quite natural. But yeah.
I mean, this, so you've never had a slip or whatever you want to call it, relapse. Do you think it's necessary for some people? You think it's necessary at all?
I don't know that it's necessary for anybody. I say I don't think having, once somebody realizes or accepts or even acknowledges that drinking is causing them the problems that they're having in their lives, I don't think it's necessary. Maybe, I know we hear it said, every drink I've had I was meant to have and all this. I don't know, that kind of stuff doesn't always make complete sense to me. I think it's just circumstances, people's situation in their own lives. I mean, for me, I was living on my own when I stopped drinking, when I got the help. I was fortunate. Again, I need to be careful how I would explain this, but I'm not 100% sure that having a drink, providing somebody gets back to the rooms, is the worst possible thing that could happen to them. I think my biggest mistakes was not looking a little bit more closely at certain issues about myself, certain underlying issues and problems about the kind of personality and character that I was, that I should say that I don't think the original 12 steps, the way they're presented and certainly outlined in the 12 by 12 and the big book, go far enough to help. That's not blaming the big book or any of the rest of it. It's just the way it is for me. I mean, I've put myself through a lot of nonsense, a lot of issues I could have avoided that felt, and again, I need to be careful how I word this, it felt as bad as a slip, if that makes sense.
Completely.
But I don't think it's necessary for people to have a slip. I don't think so.
Where was your first meeting, Brendan, can I ask?
Yeah, my first meeting was at St. Vitus, which is a small little church right across from St. Paul's in London. That was on the 22nd of July, 93. And I was actually meant to go to a meeting on, that was on a Thursday, the 22nd of July, 93. I was meant to go to a meeting in Aldgate in the city of London on the Monday. And when I got to where the venue was, I just didn't want to go in. Something didn't feel right. Something wasn't comfortable. And I got a little bit scared. I was 4 or 5 weeks away from my last drink. And when I got to the place, there was people outside and they were drinking cans of alcohol and all the rest of it. And I just didn't feel comfortable. So I didn't go in. And I knew I'd had another meeting with my counselor on the Friday of that week. So I knew I had to get to a meeting before I went to see the counselor, because I had promised him I would get to my first meeting before my next counseling session. So I picked the meeting at St. Vitus. And that's quite strange as well, because I couldn't find the meeting. I couldn't find it. And I was going back down into the tube station to leave, to go back to the flat where I was living in North London. And something told me to turn around and have another look, because there was no way I could go back and say I didn't go on the Monday and then that I couldn't find the venue on the Thursday. So I had a harder look. And sure enough, I did notice which just goes to show how important it is to put the little yellow, the little blue circular badge that we have. What we call them. So that was good. That was good. And I just got there just logo? As the meeting was starting. Logo, yeah. Logo. I know that there's a word for them. I can't remember what the exact word we call them. Not banner either. A flash or something, I think they call them. I'm not really quite sure.
They're a flash bastard.
Yeah.
Sorry, okay. Come here. The internet broke up kind of a minute ago, man. So when you started Raynham, did you want to start like an in-person one, like you were saying, you and Roger years ago then, or you just tied around with it? And can I just say Roger is the best host maybe on Zoom. He's fucking, he oozes goodness, doesn't he?
He's a lovely, gentle, very humane guy. Yeah, very, very lovely.
Someone needs to tell him, though, the World Atlantic Way is not a fucking county. And now, to the World Atlantic Way.
Well, when we're pushing him over the hills of Moher,
sunny South End.
Sunny, that's it. So, no, particularly in the last 12 months preceding to COVID, he and I had spoken about it, and I definitely did want to get a meeting going, which is why we'd originally thought we'd wait until the pandemic had sort of things had got back a little bit more to normal. Good job we didn't wait. As we started, we had our first meeting on the 9th of May last year. I mean, that would be, it's easily going to, I'm sure we're going to easily get to a year on Zoom until we get into a physical meeting. So I'm glad we didn't wait. Quite understandably, I might be wrong here. I don't want to do a disservice to Roger. I think he was a little bit hesitant as to whether we should do it that way or wait, but we went for it. We both decided we'd go for it. And I think it's probably one of the best things I've ever done.
No, easy, man. You get 30, 40 people. You know what I mean? Without trying, you know,
and it's
a few Americans, English, Irish, yeah. You know, it's a great little group. It's lovely, fucking. Me and you text back and forth. I do enjoy it. So someone said it there even today. It's just a great way to start your weekend. Like, you know what I mean?
It is, yeah. I think it would be I think it's the kind of meeting. And I'm sure there'll be others like it, that would be a good template for the way groups, and when groups run meetings, the way that the meeting should be conducted. It's very inclusive.
Yeah,
it's very inclusive. And those people who may have a faith don't have any problem expressing that. and those that don't have faith, or those that are uncertain, all equally feel comfortable in that meeting. And that in itself is wonderful. And that's not unlike the way, I think that's not really unlike the way meetings were when I first came to AA. Although I'm not one of these people that talks about, oh, AA has changed so much. I mean, it would need to come up and punch me in the nose before I'd notice differences to that degree.
Eileen's boyfriend after you. Enough scars on your chin, buddy. So yeah, I noticed it in your one, lad. It's just a great feel. Jimmy's, of course, and Tosnua, there's a great, you know what I mean? It's fucking beyond welcoming or whatever. And yeah. I was talking to someone once where it's like, if you don't get on with Brendan or Jimmy, you're the dickhead. Like, it's that's it. Like, you know what I mean? If you don't, then, you know, that's it. Like,
yeah.
So I asked you to do
my
that.
My partner might have something else to say about that.
Jesus.
I have my moments. But
you're a good lad.
I think that's the thing about AA anyway, isn't it? We're all there for the same reason. And I think I might have even mentioned it recently in a meeting that sometimes I can get a little bit too cerebral and look to, I mean, I've got no issues with myself being an atheist. What was beginning to cause me issues was, why does anybody else believe? And that's okay too. I had to start looking at that. And it makes sense from how we've evolved, if you like, about the whole notion of belief and all the rest of it.
What age were you, Brendan? Because you obviously grew up in, or you didn't, like what age were you? Just like, that's a load of shit, or? Because I have vivid memories of me saying prayers by my bed and stuff. Like, I can fucking, blue jammies, you know what I mean? Yellow teddy. Still have the teddy.
I don't think I ever believed in God in the sense of what it is in the biblical sense. This is the thing, you see, I believed in God the same way as I believed in Father Christmas. I was talking to somebody very recently in the family.
Santi, when a priest that's changed.
Anyone who's been to a Catholic mass, and when the priest would say things like, and he seated at the right hand of the Father, I always had this notion that heaven was where you went in. When you died, you went to heaven, and God was in on this huge chair. And on the left of God was the Virgin Mary, and to the right was Jesus. And you walked in, and God would say, nice to see you. And then he would tell you, go behind him where he was seated. Was a huge row of cupboards. And in each cupboard was Dairy Milk chocolate and bottles of Coke. And you would eat Dairy Milk chocolate and drink bottles of Coke all of your time in heaven. That's as close as I've ever been to anything. Now, so you can imagine, when did I stop believing that? Obviously from an early age. So
around the same time Welsh's shop closed.
Yeah, exactly. or Staunton's. But that's it. I mean, who I know people like Christopher Hitchens, and that tells the story about when he was out with his biology teacher, who happened to also be his religious education teacher. And she was talking about how how beautiful the grass was, and what a wonderful coincidence that God made the grass the color that it was, that it sat with nature perfectly. And he was 11 years of age, and he spoke about how immediately and intuitively he knew she was wrong, that it wasn't a coincidence by any stretch of the imagination. It was very much thanks to chlorophyll and all the rest of it, as to why grass was the color it was, and the whole workings, the biological workings of photosynthesis and everything else, and why the sky was there. And so that's when he, I think, begins to highlight that time in his life for when he knew he was an atheist, or he certainly didn't believe. But for me, I would say that I love the stories about, like in the Bible, about Christmas when Jesus was born. It's a lovely story to tell a kid, isn't it? Three wise men come along, and this baby is the person who's going to come along and do lovely things, raise people from the dead. So when you put all these little parables together, they're lovely stories. There's nothing innately wrong in them as stories. But in terms of having any conception or of what it is to believe in a supernatural deity or any of the rest of it, I was never really introduced to that. I mean, my family, my parents would have been Catholic, and their parents, and probably their parents, but we never had a Bible in our house. I don't know my, you know, my aunts and that who lived in the village, they would say rosaries every day, but it was the same plethora of prayers that was being said day in, day out. There was nothing, there was no theological thinking or understanding or learning going on.
Did you read the Bible?
Oh, not at all, no. But then again,
Mass.
I've read the book of Job, and I've read, yeah, you know, just the little epistles that they have at church, the select pieces that the vicar of Rome decides we should be reading.
Nice. Tell me this. I won't keep you too much longer. You're a moderately busy man looking to retire someday. But 70 night shifts to go. There's a couple more questions.
63.
Ooh, 9 sevens, boy. 9 full-time sevens. Yeah. So, did you hear of Zoom before this year? Did you, or last year, technically? Like, did you ever do an online meeting before?
The only thing we did was we started up the random meetings with Skype. On Skype. And then within a couple of weeks, all of the meetings that I was getting login details for were Zoom. So it was becoming pretty obvious that we would go over to Zoom.
I'm glad you did.
I know that I work. Microsoft have Teams. Microsoft have something similar called Teams. And they put you, when you go in on Teams, you end up in little cinema style, theater style seating. But certainly not as user friendly as Zoom.
Yeah, I heard a guy saying at the start of the pandemic it was $83 a share. Then when he was talking, it was $500 a share then. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Even a nice little...
yeah, would have been.
Hey.
Yeah.
We'd be talking about foxes on the fucking... on top of the train, would we?
Exactly. I think Zoom's going to play an integral part in what's happening in the future.
Well, it's not just meetings, obviously, that's happening for... Look, I've met a few actors and fucking people, and they've said, like, you know, it's an unreal way to audition. They don't have to record themselves now. It's just straight away, get on, boom, do it that way. And, you know what I mean? Then there's, like, sing-songs, and then there's music gatherings. There's quizzes. There's all... just, you know what I mean? But someone was telling me we're only touching the surface of what this thing can do. I was once texting you back and forth, and I was there like, do you think there's Zoom porn? And before I could even answer my question, I sent you a link to it. Know what I mean? And no, we're not editing this out. That's a great line. But Google it.
No, you can leave that in and don't edit this out as well. So you're talking about actors actually doing their little bits, auditioning on Zoom.
They're broadcasting plays and stuff, man.
Does that mean that Hollywood can expect a call from you any day?
Jesus, I don't have their number, but I'll give up my number if they want.
Kilkenny's answer in Farrell.
At least he didn't call me Weinstein.
No, you don't want to go there.
No. Just let me have a shower. That's an inside joke. If you don't know that one. Tell me this. The very slogan or passage or advice given in early recovery. You were lucky in the sense then, weren't you, going to your first meeting in England? Because it was very fucking God-centric, you were saying, like, when you went to that first one in Ireland, like, you found it funny.
I found it hilarious. I almost went to my first meeting in Leitrim, almost. And for whatever reason, because I was off, I was away from alcohol for about 3 or 4 weeks, and I told a member of my family who said I could have gone to a meeting on a Friday night, but I for whatever reason, I didn't go. So I waited until I went to my first one, as I said, in St. Vitus. And it was some months later that, because I go up and back to Ireland when I can a lot. And I really thought it funny how at the end of the meeting in Ireland, and there certainly wasn't a lot of talk about God or higher power at the meeting. And there never is in the Irish meetings, I've noticed, not the ones I've been going to. But they end with the Lord's Prayer and the Serenity Prayer. And of course, they don't just say the Lord's Prayer, they butcher it, which means that the Serenity Prayer gets a complete mashup as well. But I always did think that if it had been my first meeting and I heard the Lord's Prayer, I might not have given myself a chance to go back and listen to what I needed to hear, which is such a shame. It's just such a shame, you know.
Sorry, the question I was asking is, like, what's the slogan or passage given to you in early recovery? Something that you still say, like, fuck, one day at a time is a lot of people's favorite.
Well, the one that always comes back to me, which was given to me by a lovely man called Patrick, who was originally from Mayo. And I'll always remember when he told me, I think I was about 6 to 9 months in AA, and we were walking across Liverpool Street train station in London. And he said to me, the thing that people have to remember is, he said, when you're getting sober and you're trying to stay sober, he said, and that bit I'm paraphrasing, but this is his exact words then, was he said, is we must try to wear life like a loose cloak. And I thought that was so, it made so much sense, because wearing life like a loose cloak is exactly the opposite to a straitjacket. And sometimes even in early recovery, or indeed middle recovery, or wherever we're at in recovery, we can sometimes put ourselves into a straitjacket with absolutes. If somebody says something, you absolutely must do this, or you will not get sober unless, and to stay sober, you must do. If you're listening to that from somebody who by and large has got a lot of experience, I'm not going to say wisdom, I'm going to say a lot of experience. If you're listening to things like that, you could be causing problems for yourself, because that's not true. There are no absolutes. What's absolutely right for you today might not be absolutely right for you even tomorrow, never mind for me. So going back to what he said, wear life like a loose cloak. It's allowing the problems to come at you without getting too offended with life, and letting the good times come and enjoying the good times as well. You know, sometimes we have to make sure that the whole thing about coming to AA is to stop drinking. Doesn't mean that we have to stop letting our hair down. You know, we still have to enjoy ourselves. One of the things that I heard a lot when I came into AA first, that I do remember, you don't hear it that much anymore, it probably doesn't make a lot of sense, that you could come into AA as a thief. And as long as you stop drinking, you might just become a better thief. It's not going to make you a saint. I'm not trying to suggest to anybody that if they're a thief, they use it to their advantage. But I think I think you kind of get to
put down the drinks, stay robbing your grandpa.
Yeah, you know, there was a chap, people used to talk about him, a member who's, I think, long time dead now, Mick the Tick. And in my early meetings,
yeah, you know, this guy,
a lot of people used to,
lad selling the watches.
I'd never known that was it, and I didn't know anything. I didn't even know why they called him Mick the Tick. And somebody said, "Well, have you ever seen his arms? He had watches all the way up his arms." And that's, I don't think he came mental about the, I don't want to speak ill of the dead, but I don't know that he came across his watches in the most law-abiding fashion. I might be wrong. So Mick the Tick, wherever you are, forgive me. So, well, you know, that just people were being accepted for what they wore.
The story I know about him is he'd sell you a watch at the start of the meeting, and if it was broke at the end of it, he'd either give you the money back or else he'd give you a different one. Like you said, up and down his arm, he'd have about 7 or 8 fucking. Because when I heard Mick the Tick, I was there like, oh, this lad's a fucking dope, is he? Like, no, the watch is by. What do you? Oh, now I see what you mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the funniest things you've heard.
So there you go.
Be it in a room or in real life, Zoom, whatever. Something that you were just walking along and it just makes you laugh.
Oh my God.
You have a God now?
You've just put me on the spot there. I don't know. There's so many things. There are so many things that would just make me laugh. Yeah. You know how even you and I chatting here now, we might be talking about something or anyone else that in families we do it.
Don't be Irish, man. Talking
shorthand. We don't have to spell everything out completely. We can say things in shorthand. So sometimes even a look or a glimpse at somebody, a little glance across the room can be quite funny because there's a lot more into that than actually having to say something. But I'm not 100%. I can't think off the top of my head of anything right now. There would probably be lots. I'll probably think of lots now when you finish. But it certainly happens a lot in my family, where we'll say one or two words, and it just it gets us going. It's the preamble to thinking about a lot of things. You know,
we got a mutual friend, and she told me the other day how much fucking she loves you or whatever and how important you've been to her. And she was telling me this joke that it's a priest is walking down the road, and then a prostitute comes up to him. It was hey father, blowjob, $5. And he goes, ah, and he runs off. But 2 minutes later, another prostitute comes up and goes, hey father, blowjob, $5. He goes, Jesus. He runs off again. All of a sudden, he's on his way home, and a third one comes up and goes, hey, father, blowjob, $5. He goes, for fuck's sake, and he runs off, and he gets home, and he talks to the nun, you know what I mean? He goes, sister, what's a blowjob? And then she goes, oh, that's easy, father, $5, just like in town.
That's terrible.
Do you know who said it? Great woman.
Who told you that joke?
Huh? Good woman. She's a great woman. Yeah. Yeah, I won't keep
so
you.
I'm going to ask you a question. How many more of these podcasts have you done since Joe? I'm waiting for some more.
I don't want it, Frank. Do you know, listen, that's a nice one. I did one with someone.
No, you didn't say
want to release.
Is that on Tuss?
Yeah. It's on the Tuss Neo website. Do I have to send you the shit as well? I do. Jeez, I thought you were able to do it.
The website, then I didn't realize.
No, I can send it to you, lad. Yeah, but I just thought you were, you know, not retired jet lag. I thought you could have.
I've been very. That's it. I'm very busy. I'm very busy sticking my nose into everything else.
Do you think?
Well, you.
I got you to speak at the Palooza, lad. Yeah, that's where you're getting all these speaking arrangements now. You know what I mean? Is it down to me?
I'm not good. Yeah, everything I can guarantee is down to you. I'm not going to let you know that, though, in case you get a big head.
I'm going to edit that out.
It's a little
everything
like,
is down to you.
I love that where you put Joel C, where you mentioned to Joel C how pivotal he's been in getting secular AA very much in prominence across the fellowship. And I loved the way he didn't dodge the question. He met it head on. And I thought it was a very, very, very good answer and a very humble answer to it, to what he said. But I think there's no doubt about it that Josie will continue to be a huge part of what's happening. There's no doubt. There's absolutely no doubt, you know. And yeah, it's great. But he did remind me as well. I thought what was, there was a couple of things that I took from Joe's podcast, which are, well, one of the main things was how he talks about the changes will come from the ground up, exactly the way AA is structured. And even I allowed myself to fall into the trap of thinking that the push and the pull for what's required for secular AA will have to come from general service offices. That's not fair on the general services offices. It's certainly not fair on the general service conference or the trustees. It will come from the ground, and that people like myself will have to remember to be humble enough to do what we can and leave it at that. And that is to just help organize and promote meetings in my area. And if they work, they work. And if they attract people into recovery, then they will grow. They will grow and they'll go into other areas, whether we even know about it or not. And eventually that will translate into what way AA is perceived, not just to us, all of us in the fellowship, but to the world at large. And I think that was something I took from what Joe said, and it was wonderful. And I hope he and other people like Joe mentions that time and time again. And that will be important as well when this pandemic is over, that we keep it simple. We keep it to what it is we're meant to be doing.
Because you were following that case, weren't you? That when it came out in 2011 or...
Yeah, I mean,
whatever it was.
Yeah, it was it was very sad. And in the end up, the people that caused those issues actually weren't there at the end. They weren't part of the solution. It's not as if there had been a for want of a better word, a victory won against those individuals or collective of individuals. It was a victory first and foremost, without sounding too cliche or soppy, for the suffering alcoholic. But it was a victory for people with common sense and people who were rational in their approach. But the people that caused it, they weren't there in the end of that intergroup. They had left. They had rotated out of service. So common sense in the end, thankfully, won the day. Common sense did win. And it was such a shame. The other way of looking at it is perhaps if it hadn't happened, it would have been a little bit slower. As Cyril does say, in London, you know, things happen at a glacial speed in AA, but the case in Canada certainly moved the glacier at a greater speed, and it certainly brought into greater prominence the need for AA itself to take stock of itself and see what can be done. But the way to do it is exactly the way Joe said it, from we people on the ground, just the ordinary alcoholic, which is all of us, going to meetings, turning up, and letting people know that there is another way to recover. You do not have to have a deity or anything pushed on you to stay away from that drink.
And did you ever go to the London meeting that they started in Islington in real life?
Never, believe it or not.
Did you know about it?
And I had Yes, I knew all about it, and I had intended so many times. To get over there would take me about an hour and a half, believe it or not. Yeah, it's quite a distance from where I live, because I'm out in Essex. But besides that, it was something that was certainly on the bucket list, the AA bucket list, to get
Buddy
over
Holly's
there and see how they conducted the meeting.
A woman.
Buddy Holly.
Yeah.
You just like to lob bits in there now and again, don't you?
I do, Buddy Holly.
Yeah. Oh, Buddy Holly.
The only way is Buddy Holly. Actually, I'm going to be someday after this pandemic is all over. And so I was asking you before, how far is St. Albans from you, Luton? You were like, well, it's about an hour and a half on the M2 horse. that's my Brendan.
It's the M11. For me, it's the M11, the M25, and then the M1. So no problem. getting around there. Okay. That's something you're saying, that's something that I'm really looking forward to, is meeting up with so many people. And as you know, I have advocated a convention for a long time.
What are you on about?
just seeing everybody and getting together and having the chance to have a little bit of fellowship and a bit of fun with everybody. It'll be lovely.
First time hearing about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So you see, it's true what I said. You don't have to be a saint to stay sober, huh?
Well, I'm telling you that me and another member kind of half, like, we love you to bits, yeah? We, like, take the piss out of you behind your back. Yeah. Like, and we're going to have a lovely warm cup of tea, lads, and a few biscuits, and we're all going to be together. And this convention is going to be right crack. And, like, and I feel I have to tell you this every now and again, because it's just one of those things where it's like, oh, God, no. He knows I'm messing, but I am looking forward to it as well, man. But just your enthusiasm for 2021 Leitrim, boys. Let's fucking do this. But we do.
Looks like 2022 now.
Jesus. Well, we have one coming worldwide Zoom June 21st, I believe. June 19th, 2021.
That's right, John. That should be good. Yeah.
24 hours, man.
And of course, Raynham will be hosting the ICSA on the 2nd of May as well at 8 p.m. UK time.
Do you have ideas for the speakers yet? Surely you are. Do you want to take a step back?
One of the speakers. Yeah, well, I want to. I was suggesting this morning. It's up to Roger. I mean, Roger's can decide for himself. I'd like to get some more regular attenders to the meeting to decide how they want to go ahead. That's not to say, of course, being a control freak, that I won't want to put my pennies worth in, but I'm happy for them to throw it out.
You saw it the other day, so like Mikey was the host and he did introductions, so you can still do that, or else you can still talk. Or I love Mikey to bits. He's actually speaking for us in a few weeks. And today we actually have your buddy, John S, I suppose, remember to use last names.
Yeah. That should be good. Right then.
It's been thank lovely. Thank you so much for your time, Brendan.
Mark, you're a diamond, you are, but I'm not going to let you know that.
I love when you call me young Mark, brilliant, and you don't know I'm in the room. Where's that young Mark? He's a great lad. All of a sudden, you bollocks. Brendan, thank you for your time, your friendship, everything, and I don't think we need to edit too much out. So, you're a diamond, man, and enough of that.
Right, fella. I will speak to you very soon.